Welcome to the Huntsville Macintosh Users Group August 2007 informal meeting.
So now we are recording, and I don't know why it is clicking away here. That must be a feature of GarageBand 08 so that I'm staying on rhythm. that's a new one. But anyway, the neat thing about this microphone is that it has three modes. It can be a standard microphone to just talk directly into it, filtering out some of the ambient sounds. It has two modes for that, and it has a third mode, which is what I've selected right now, where it's omnidirectional. That is to say, it will pick up sounds from the hall rather than just if I was sitting directly in front of it, which is what you would use for doing voiceovers and whatnot. So, that having been said, yes, sir?
Is that manually selected on the microphone or the software selected?
What? There's a switch. Yeah, the neat thing about this microphone is you just plug it in. There's no software to be installed. It goes into the USB port, and anything that can use a microphone on the computer, in this case GarageBand, you just go into the preferences, select that as your input source, and you're good to go. Okay. Now, I sure wish I could turn this metronome off, though. Let's try that. Ah, that's better. You know, it is hard to think in 4/4 time. So what I think we will do now is just go back to doing the program as discussed, and I'll turn things over to Adam, who is the presiding officer today.
You want to do the program first or any flashes?
Well, that's pretty much the program.
So. Okay. All right. So like Mario said, we're just going to do flashes today. So someone raise their hand. Let's start it up.
Yeah.
Speaking of GarageBand, tried from last meeting we had, that we mentioned about, you know, I've got a medium grade microphone,
mm-hmm.
and I was going to, my wife and I would record some nursery rhymes for our granddaughter on a CD.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have to admit, I didn't spend typical research time that I do, so I'm going to state this flash problem, and you might say, it's simple. My wife's got an EMAC, and that's our area in our library where we can do this. EMAC.
Right.
So I plugged the microphone in, and then went to the preferences and saw that it was, you know.
Uh-huh.
Then I went to, and I got the older version of iLife GarageBand, not the latest.
Uh-huh.
I went there, and I tried to figure how to get that
well,
into there.
Yeah,
I didn't spend a lot of time, and I said, I had to go somewhere. I said, I'm coming to the back club this week, so I'll ask the question.
Actually, this is a perfect question because I sort of never have touched iLife 08 until today, because Bob was good enough to have gone out and installed it here. I don't even have iLife on my PowerBook at all. I'll fix that today, but let me say how I went about it, because about a week and a half ago, the Faculty Senate at A&M, of which I'm a member, had a one-day retreat, and we wanted to record some of those sessions. There were some presentations we wanted to preserve. So I said, well, how am I going to record it? Of course, on my work laptop, I do have iLife 06 on it. And so I went in there, and first thing that happens when you open GarageBand is it wants you to play piano. All right?
Right.
Now, so far so good. You click on it to change the instrument. Where does the microphone fit in here? It doesn't, because it only does virtual instruments. So, the way I went about it in iLife 06, which is exactly the same step I took here, except it looks a little different, is to go in, create a new track. That new track, I have the choice of using virtual or real instruments. So I go pop up the menu, choose vocals. You can actually see that sort of grayed out here on the right-hand side, real instrument up on top. On the left-hand column, I've got vocals. On the right-hand side, I chose ambient vocals. I could have chosen any other one of these particular vocal differences. What are the differences? Just different kind of filters. Then once I had that established, I went and deleted the piano track because I'm not going to use it. So I'm left with the vocal track I want to record. And then it's just a matter of clicking on record. So it's a couple steps. I wish it was a little bit more logical and quicker.
I missed the clicking on the piano, and I played around with that.
Yeah, well, as I said, if you click on the piano, you cannot choose a real instrument. All you can choose is a virtual one. So you can change from piano to some other virtual instrument, but you can't get a real one. The only way you can get to a real one is by creating a new track and then choosing a real instrument.
You created a new track.
Well, now, you see up here,
no, I can't see
that. up here, that's the track that we're recording currently. Okay, so I went in and said, let's see here, of course, I really don't want to do this as I'm recording, but I just said, track, new track, okay. And that just added a second track right below here, because of course this is a multi-track type mixer. And so then I set the properties that I required and then got rid of the track I didn't need. So all there's to that. Okay. So it's a little trick, but it's not very difficult.
There's a follow-on question.
Yes.
On the EMAC, it's got the built-in microphone
right.
And
right. Yeah. I had to go in.
External microphone.
Yeah, I had to go into the
USB, but on any of your laptops, I assume you have to have a USB type.
Yeah, well, okay. There are three generic kinds of microphones that you're going to use. Okay, there is the El Cheapo microphone that goes into the sound microphone port. Okay, of course, you've got the built-in, you know, for what that's worth. You can plug something in with the mini 1/8 inch stereo connector and the microphone input, just as bad, okay, probably worse, because that's poor sound quality. Then the medium thing is something like we've got here, okay, we've got a USB based microphone. Your high end is where you have a XLR type connector into an A to D converter, which then connects via either USB or FireWire to the computer. Okay, that's sort of what the pros use. A little bit overkill for my purpose and for our purpose here. The USB microphone is sort of a happy medium. Data goes digitally directly into the computer. The A to D happens in the ball rather than in the computer. Okay, and that usually is better quality.
So this should have a microphone input? I see a head.
It certainly does. Every PowerBook or MacBook has back, I don't know how many years, has a built-in microphone. I know my Pismo G3 had one. Yeah.
You said built-in microphone, he said microphone input.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood, sorry.
Yeah, I can't find
There should be somewhere on.
The analog input may not be on the MacBook or PowerBook, or may not on an iBook.
I might.
You only see the LVI. Right, right. Yeah,
okay.
So that computer certainly doesn't have that.
So in other words, you're basically limited to a USB-based one.
Okay, but on my EMAC, I've got one. There's no reason not to do it on my EMAC.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's probably your easiest way of doing it anyway. Of course, the cheapest, as I said, is just to use the built-in, but your quality, your mileage and the quality may be variable. Keith, I think, was next.
I was just going to speak to the setup we got here for convoluted and agonizing reasons that we probably couldn't go into here. The Army does not allow us to put CDs in our computers anymore.
Oh, that's good of them, but I can understand where they're coming from.
So we have this fine machine here that will play CDs, but we can't use it to listen to CDs. So I have a 15-year-old portable CD player that I wanted to listen to through speakers hooked up to my computer. So I've got it running through GarageBand with the analog input.
Sure.
And you can, once you've got a track established, you can monitor the track. Run it out the audio. Now, the selection of ins and outs and such on the system preferences in the Mac OS, you know, you go to GarageBand and you select stuff there, and then you go mess around with the ins and outs selections. And it's a mystery to me.
You
think you've got it all set up where it's not working. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe the application overrides
it. It does. Quite honestly, I think the output is set by the system control, because I don't see any output selector. Well, wait a second. I take that back. I think GarageBand does have an output selector as well. So yeah, the application will definitely override what the system's preferences are, which, if you think about it, may be a good thing. Reason being that you can do two audio processes in parallel. One goes to the system default, and the other one goes to whatever GarageBand wants to be doing. Matter of fact, I was listening to a podcast yesterday where there was a guy trying to listen to multiple radio streams. And the problem is, this was sort of a Windows-related problem, but same issue would happen if you're trying to listen to these streams on the Mac, is that there are many applications that only allow you one concurrent stream, right? You can only listen to one radio station at once, you think. So this guy was trying to listen to, I don't know, three, four, whatever. So there are some pieces of software where you can have multiple instances running concurrently, like VLC, for instance. Okay, so you can sort of work around that. But why do I bring that up? VLC allows you to set the input, or the output in this case, separately for each instance that's running. So for example, I could send the output to different set of speakers. I have one computer pushing different speakers. It requires additional hardware to be present, but if it were, you could do that. Lip.
The recording sound. You already have a toaster, a KM8 or 6 or 7. You have CD docker. You have an analog input like that. You can record that way. We do it here at church, our service. I donated a power booth there.
Right.
And then we feed the through a little RCA phone plug adapter.
Right.
Service and all recording from sound. We do it in stereo. So it works real fine. I work as a CD burner on it too, so we burn a surface and just 10 minutes after. But you have toaster, and you already have an audio input for anything you want to put into audio or different things, analog.
Yep, another program that's very good for recording this sort of thing, and the price is right on it, is a program called Audacity. It's free, open source, and it can either record things in RAW format or make MP3s and a couple other compressed formats.
Is Audio Hijack still around?
You know what? I don't know. It may very well be, but I'm not familiar with that one. I've heard of the name.
Yeah,
me too. Yeah,
Suman. I have a follow-up flash. This is a tape deck.
What's that?
Oh, retro.
Very, very, very 20th century.
I should have known the nuts in the peanut gallery would sit out right away. This is the follow-up flash. I think it was Bob. If I've forgotten the name, I apologize. The gentleman behind Joe. Bill. I keep mixing up my Bills and Bob.
Hey, it starts with a B.
You know? So the idea was, how do you take cassette tapes, you know, into your Mac? And I think the answer given was, you actually play the cassette tape, but instead of using external headphones, which you might do, you take an adapter cable, which in my case would be a quarter-inch cable, it looks like, as opposed to an eighth-inch cable on one side from Radio Shack, and then the eighth-inch cable to the input port on your Mac.
Right.
I just wanted to bring it in and physically point it out, just to make it absolutely dead simple that I got it, because I need to do it also. So, and then I forget, did we conclude that GarageBand could or was there a sound recording application that was suggested?
Well, Lip just mentioned, I think, the correct tool. If you have Adaptec Toast or Roxio Toast nowadays, it comes with a utility to do the very thing. And there are probably some filters in there that are good if you're trying to take something from a phono disc, take out a little bit of the crack, pop, etc. I bet you some of your audio tapes will have similar problems. So having filters to clean that up is probably a good thing. I don't think that a GarageBand is all that good at that particular job. It sort of reminds me, and the name of the application right now is not coming to me, but Adobe has a sound application that they just came out with this year. Sound Room or something like that, that has incredibly good filters for this purpose. It's a little bit more high end, so it may not be worth the expenditure.
So just to clarify something, you open up Toast or
no.
It's a separate application called CD Doctor.
Okay. CD Doctor.
CD Doctor.
Yeah, when it comes up, it gives you actually a record. You know, it gives you an extra choice of sound, but whether it be from a microphone or from a source thing, or you're an internal jack, then it actually either bring up an old recording, or either revisit the recording you've done, do it possibly, or you do a new recording. It brings up a console screen, looks like a recorder type thing with a red button, pause button, and everything. And what it is, you hit the, as soon as you want to record, but you hit the record, like a phonograph record or something that's analog. Feed into it, then load itself in. It will tell you the bottom screen how much hard drive space you got left, how many hours you got left to record on.
I mean, when you hit record, you do that and then you go hit play on the cassette deck?
Yep.
Okay.
That's right.
And when you through the last track of your cassette deck or record, you hit stop and it'll automatically generate a wave pattern for you on the screen all the way across. What you can do, you have a feature in CD Doctor, auto track selection. It puts automatic detector delay between tracks. Sometimes depending on the kind of recording you have, you got a concert recording, it's inaudible, the sound's inaudible sometimes, it's noise in the background. But you can do manual tracking too. And rearrange tracks you want to do it, label what you want to do it, and you can save individual tracks out as AIFF files, readable in both iMovie, whatever, iDVD, whatever you want to do, and iTunes too. But you also can reorder it. So you got an album you have on record. You put it in there, and you put the tracks you want, you move it around what you want, then hit a button on top right to go to Toast, and we'll burn an audio CD for you.
Okay.
It's a part of the package, built into it too. You have a record that's got snaps and cracks and pops. There's a filter panel that comes down too. They got noise hum, background sound, cracks and pops.
These are like checkboxes or sliders or something?
They're checkboxes.
Okay.
And also, too, you can have things that you can normalize the new version, you can normalize the sound. If you have one track higher and lower the other, you want all the same sound, basically sound level, you don't see for yourself, you can normalize all the tracks at one time. So, the difference you can do with it is simple to talk, it's simple to use, cut the tape, the idea is that you can, you know, archive or create your own version of your own mix and you put it into iTunes or somewhere else or a CD if you want to.
What's it cost?
It's included with Toast.
For $100.
Okay. Toast is like anywhere from $80 to $100. Depends if you get
out. Yeah, I was going to say 80, but yeah.
If you upgrade the older version, I'll give you a discount. You can download it or get a CD with it.
Could you
go to
Amazon?
Could
you use the audio track that you had in iMovie and take it into CD and do the normal thing?
You save the auto track out, you stretch the sound out of iMovie, and then bring it into it, and open it up, and auto saves out the.
You would be an old recording?
Yeah. And you save it out as a separate audio track extracted from your iMovie, and then go into like CD Docker and fix it up the way you want to do it.
Thanks, Luke. I just had
a
comment on here.
Go ahead.
I've been using Sound Studio. I don't know if it's $80, I found out. But I just plug in an RCA in the back of your record player and plug it into the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you, and I just run the whole disc. And then you can put markers on it, and it will save it as individual files. And they've got an AIFC format. Gives you compressed AIFF, which I can't tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And now I use iTunes to put go to MP3.
I'm just curious. You said you're using an old turntable.
Yeah.
And you're going directly from the turntable into the computer?
Yeah.
I've been told that that's not the right thing to do.
That works.
Well, I don't know. You must have a very good turntable because most people connect the turntable to an amplifier.
Oh, take it back. There's an amplifier in it.
Okay.
It's an old record player.
That's better.
I'm sorry.
I was concerned there that you're doing some sort of magic somewhere in between that I hadn't heard about.
No, it's just an old record player.
Oh, all right. Joe.
Back on Audacity.
Yeah.
Audacity has a lot of flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you right now, my intended application, I just found a bunch of old Agatha Christie audiobooks for $4 on cassette.
Ah.
So I'm taking a long drive over Labor Day weekend, and I just, for $4 each, the price is right, and I'll just transcribe it up and put it onto the iPod. It'll be nice to go along. Hours of entertainment.
Well, it's cheaper because like the latest Harry Potter book, 12 CDs.
I could set up the lending library for Christmas, is that what you said? Oh. I'm finding numbers to be a revelation in doing things. And I did a whole series that was called Financial Planning in Excel. I'm converting all of my spreadsheets to numbers because it's going to enable me to do a whole bunch of new things. And I could easily be convinced to revisit that with numbers at some point, in the coming year.
Function-wise, more functions than Excel?
More flexibility in using the functions, in my opinion, although a more limited set of functions. But especially the way it dynamically displays potential results for you, in a way that Excel does not, is a revelation.
Huh.
It helps you as you're building it.
That's interesting.
What's the new Excel?
The new Excel would be that gentleman, and he's not allowed to say.
Well, quite honestly, I can't say because I'm not currently beta testing anything. So I don't know. Quite honestly, I have not seen any of the builds for whatever reason, so can't say.
I would hate to go through the energy of converting something and find out next week the new Excel app does it all already.
Yeah, probably the new Microsoft product, 2007, the Office with Windows has a new extension now, XLSC, or C, which is a encrypted fashion of files. You have to have their version of software to open it, or a reader, retail software.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft now pushed the 2007 Office and protection capability and exclusivity for their software.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Apparently, numbers can actually open a new XML format.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not hear that it could do the new encrypted format. Yes.
Well,
2007 encrypted format, it will open up as an XML type situation. We convert it for you to numbers.
Well, that's
what we've seen before done, but a lot of people complain right now you can't read write Excel files.
Mm-hmm.
This can read and write in the 2007 files out now for mm-hmm. Office. And 2008 Office file for Mac and for Office.
Mm-hmm.
So they have that capability there too. Mm-hmm. But they want backward compatible. They don't want to piss off the customer base.
Mm-hmm.
They know it done before in the past.
Let me add, I downloaded it after it was brought up at the last meeting,
mm-hmm.
and I had a newsletter from my alumni club I wanted to publish. I was tired of using, trying to fiddle fart around with Word, you know, which is not good for a newsletter. I never used any of the iWord work products in the past. Got in there, didn't even open, download the PDF manual until later. And got in there and built 2/3 of my newsletter in literally an hour. Everything was drag and drop.
Mm-hmm.
And did beautiful word wraps. And now the nice thing is when you export it, because I got to send it out to 200 people in PDF format, they have 3 levels of PDF format because your images are your driver.
Mm-hmm.
And I selected the lowest resolution and medium resolution. So I can get my PDF file from 8 megs down to 1.5 meg. I couldn't on the screen probably tell the difference, printed it, and it was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing, I exported it then to a Word file to see what kind of artifacts,
mm-hmm.
only found one little border that was out of place. So you got my vote, I'm buying it.
I had bought it.
Same here. Yeah.
Both of them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite honestly, Apple is very systematically chipping away at what Microsoft has here. Keynote, I've been using it since version 1. I don't go back to PowerPoint. I mean, I don't do any presentations in PowerPoint anymore. There's only one reason I would use PowerPoint, and that's because we have an audience response system that only works with PowerPoint at this point. The keynote support is still a little shaky, but that's the only reason. And same with Pages. I had a similar experience. First time I used it for something meaningful, we had to put out three panel flyers. You know, I wouldn't have thought of doing that in Word, but it was a 20-minute exercise to get flyer for a workshop app. Amazing. I mean, and yeah, I'm still playing with a little bit with numbers. I haven't quite gotten as far as I should have with that, but I'm trying out some esoteric things.
Apple Works is a heck of a lot better than Word. Word is a beast for newsletters.
Yeah, apropos Apple Works, it has now been declared dead.
Yep.
That's what I was going to ask, is if you load iWorks, then you need to delete Apple Works.
No, you don't.
You don't.
They're, one does not overwrite the other. They're totally separate applications.
But if Apple Works works for you, you don't need iWorks.
That's right. But Apple Works is no longer being maintained.
So can you transfer something between Apple Works and iWorks?
I would venture that you'd be able to import it in some way, but I'm not absolutely certain. What are you going to say, Marius?
What I'm thinking is Apple Work uses more or less proprietary file formats, So the best way of getting things from it to iWork applications is to export in a Microsoft compatible form. Now, having said all that, there is functionality in AppleWorks that does not exist in iWork. There's no database, for example. There's no drawing program. Okay. However, you know, there are better tools for most of those things anyway. Apple sort of says, well, it's a file maker, okay? But that's, for most people, complete overkill. There's one thing that I haven't looked into, and I don't know, maybe you have, Suman. Is there a pseudo database functionality in Numbers? Because Excel has something like that, where you can sort of run it in database mode, in list mode.
I don't think so. I've only just begun, though.
Yeah.
I'm all right. Can you remember, somebody said keep your old database application when you put on it.
Well, as I said,
I
see no reason why one would delete AppleWorks from one's computer just because you buy iWork.
That's right.
You can still use it.
Yeah.
It just won't be supported. I mean, if the next system update breaks it, don't be shocked.
Yeah. I would probably put money on it breaking. That's why discontinued it at this point.
If AppleWorks runs under Leopard, that'll be a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, I'd be shocked.
Because they're not going to ensure compatibility with that. They're not going to work to make that happen.
They pulled the plug at this time for a good reason. Bob, you want
to
say something?
When it comes to databases, I've been using FileMaker before it was FileMaker.
Right.
And that's when it was flat file, and now it's
relational.
Relational. It's fully capable, it's fast, it allows you to draw your own layouts and everything. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Having said that, that's still a fairly lightweight database.
What?
Fairly lightweight, 4,000 records. I've got databases with millions of records on them, and I'm using MySQL, but that is a much tougher piece of software to deal with.
Just one more comment on going from AppleWorks. Okay, you can always get MacLink Plus, which does all kinds of translations from all kinds of programs. Mm-hmm. So DataViz is, I think, the name of the company, DataViz.
Mm-hmm.
And MacLink Plus is something less than $100. I don't exactly remember.
It's up to version 14.
You know, yeah. Up to version 14. Larry can get it for you. You can look it up on DealMac. The Apple Store online has it. And you know, that has hundreds upon hundreds of translators for all kinds of formats, including AppleWorks.
Some of the real old AppleWorks wouldn't open in the pages. Yeah, it's like they were files from 1992 or somewhere.
Yeah.
Something my wife had, how early a version she had of the AppleWorks. But, yeah, I had to go through and do some conversions to get them to open.
To get them to open.
Yeah, and that's where MacLink Plus comes in, because
MacLink Plus will go all the way back virtually to the beginning of the Mac.
That's where I had to deal with it.
The
real early version of AppleWorks
would
deal with it.
They have the same problem with PageMaker, 30 days transition from 3 to 4. Only PageMaker 2 level 30 is 1 document. You have to go back to the old version of page 2 level and take the info into the newer version to get the 2 level back to the 1 PageMaker. So don't you do that? The shop's up in the flip with version 1.1.1 and 1.5.
Well, they did similar things with Photoshop too. Photoshop Elements, but let me say a quick note about that. Photoshop Elements for the Mac right now is severely out of date. Okay, it's 2 versions behind, realistically speaking, what the Pro version is doing. Having said that, for most people, Elements is plenty enough, even the current version. I have CS3, very powerful, but it has a lot of things I'll never touch. It's just like our discussion of Microsoft Word here a few minutes ago. You know, how many functions within Word do you normally use? About 5%. You know, the rest of the stuff is so esoteric that you rarely need it. You know. Yes, sir.
Question about Photoshop. Anybody that has got a new hard drive and wants to format it, make sure you do not select the case sensitive.
Oh, really?
Because Photoshop, I did that on my own new machine to make sure I didn't mess
sure.
something down a Unix level.
Right.
Photoshop barf, big time.
Oh really? That's an interesting fact.
I tried to run, but anything complex I tried, it screwed up the files and would not do. It destroyed the images, scanned images, and so.
What have you tried to do that caused this?
Pardon?
What have you tried to do that caused this problem?
Basically, I formatted the hard drive in the case sensitive version. The default is not case sensitive.
Right.
So make sure you take the default, which is basically the extended with extended with the journaling. Take the default and leave it at that, and don't try to defunct it.
Well, it's sort of two-edged sword here. On one hand, you've got commercial applications like Photoshop that have serious issues.
Yeah.
On the other hand, there are many Unix applications that require case sensitive and have to be doctored to work on a Mac because of the case insensitivity of the file system. So, because sometimes you have two files with the same name, one is capitalized, the other is lowercase, and what happens?
That's why I put a second drive in.
Well, I have
both bootables.
Well, that's right. I have case sensitive, not as my boot drive, but for data. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I've got a need or a desire to go Wi-Fi on my old Mac G5.
You say old?
Yeah.
G5 is not that old.
I got one that was manufactured before June of 2005, so it's a little funky compared to
all right.
the more recent one.
OS on
G5? Yes. Yeah.
Oh, but not as
machine you can do it on.
Yeah, but it's not in boot mode, but under classic. Yeah.
Yes,
all right. Because there are no G5 can boot into OS 9.
My point is I want to go Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
A new way to tie in the G5, which means they've got to bring it in.
Right.
I'm asking, is there any alternative other than doing Mac?
Well,
Wi-Fi?
Yes and no. The cleanest, most elegant way is to install the airport card in the G5. That's what you would have
two
to.
Two choices for this machine, and you've got to know it when you open it up.
Oh, that's. He should be able to figure that out based on the model. But the thing is that there's an internal card that you have to add that is connected between some interface on the motherboard and the antenna. The antenna, by the way, you may have to search for because you got the antenna with the computer when you bought it, even if you didn't order the card. But that's point number one. So what is your alternative? Well, you can use, where do we have our airport express? Can you just get an airport express, plug it in the wall, plug the Ethernet into your G5, and you're good to go. Okay, that's the cheapest solution. It's cheaper than the $100 card, and you don't have to carry anything into Larry's store.
There is another.
Yeah, but that doesn't allow both machines to.
What do you mean? Well, what do you. Let's back up.
Airport Express for this.
Right. You just have a second Airport Express for the G5. Okay, but that works just fine. It's plugged in, set it up, and you're good to go. And it's probably cheaper than getting that internal cord, just as fast.
That's simple. Marius, were you going to mention getting a USB dongle also?
That is yet another alternative. Okay. USB dongles, there are other external modifiable access points, which is really what the Airport Express is. Mm-hmm. You know, other manufacturers make similar things, probably cheaper. Maybe even if you have, I don't know, what's your main base station that you're going out on? Is that one of the new ones, or is that one of the sort of UFO-looking ones? Or are you using someone else's?
No, the latter, yeah.
So you got one of the dome ones?
No.
What are you using to connect to the outside world? What kind of base station?
What kind of wireless base station? Are you using Apple Airport or Apple Airport Extreme?
Extreme.
Okay. It kind of looks like a UFO?
No.
The boxy one?
The little square one.
So you got the new N version. So there, you might want to look for something like an Airport Express, but made by someone else that supports N, because that's going to give you better bandwidth. Mm-hmm. Because Airport Express is only G.
That's right. Or you do
what Suman suggests. You get one of these USB dongles that supports N. Okay, either one of those versions will work.
And I think that's $90. You just get that USB dongle. But you don't have to take your machine in.
Right.
You just plug it in.
But the USB dongle, you got to be careful that it has a Mac OS X driver. Mm-hmm. Okay, because not all of them do. Whereas if you get one of these little Airport Express type things, basic access point type thing, it doesn't need a driver because you connect via Ethernet. Okay. The only thing is sometimes the initial setup to configure the thing requires Windows. You got to be careful. Some vendors do that. Okay, and that causes some problems. That's where the Airport Express, even though it's slower, a lot easier to use because it works very well with a Mac. But again, it's a function of how much speed you need. But if you have a N base station, you probably want to have N components elsewhere. Of course, there's one other point to be made there. You already are using an Airport Express, right? And that means your network is running at G speeds regardless of the N capability of your base station.
So in other words, just
buy another Airport Express because you're already at that speed.
That's right. He's absolutely right. So if you've already slowed down your N network anyway, so you could just buy another Airport Express if you like.
I'm going to need some sort of splitter between the cable box.
Hmm?
If you have an Airport Extreme, Marius, might it help if you actually pulled up the picture, on Apple's website, just to make sure?
Let's get a different computer here. I don't want to break the recording session here.
Oh, okay. You don't want to go away from GarageBand.
Yeah,
okay.
I have found that if I do so, it quits recording. So, it really hates being in the background. It's one of those diva type things. It wants... to take over the whole show.
So that means if we're recording in one of our meetings, we need a dedicated computer.
Mm-hmm. But is that it?
Is that what you mean?
That's his base station. But what we're looking for is...
No.
You wouldn't need it.
No, I've got the Airport Express.
Yeah. But I'm trying to figure out, the Airport Express is one end of your connection. What is the other end? I thought you said you're using this guy, but no. You misunderstood when you said Foxy. So you've got your laptop wirelessly talking to the Airport Express. Is
that?
Okay, now I understand your configuration. So your Airport Express is hooked up to the outside world and wirelessly to your laptop, and you're trying to have your desktop machine talk to it as well.
Right.
Okay. Now, things get even easier. You just get another one of these Airport Expresses, hook it to your desktop, and set it up to talk to the one that's hooked to the outside world. That's the very easiest thing to do. Okay. So there's one hooked up to your cable modem or your DSL, and there's another one hooked to the G5. All there's to it. So the one is hooked up as a base station. That's the one that's linked to broadband. The other one is hooked up sort of as a wireless bridge to the Ethernet of your desktop. But that's by far the easiest thing to do. Yes, sir.
I've got a wireless capable router. Now, how does that fit all this?
Well,
or does it replace all this?
Essentially, the Airport Express that he's using as connected to his broadband is exactly that.
It's a router.
It's a router. Yeah. And it's wireless.
Okay.
Matter of fact, it's not much of a wired router at all, because there's only one wire you can connect to it, namely the one that goes to the outside world. Okay, a normal wireless router like this box here will not only have the wireless for the LAN, and of course the wired WAN, okay, but it also has wired LAN ports. This one, this new model here as of this year, has four. The old model only had one for LAN, so you had to have a switch or a hub to connect it to. Of course, something that I haven't posted on the website is that they've actually upgraded this model quietly. So the LAN ports have gone from 100 megabits to 1 gigabit, which I wish they would have sold when I bought mine earlier this year. But I still have a gigabit switch it plugs into, so it's not that big a deal.
How much is this unit here?
$179 is the full price?
$179, yeah. That's what I paid. Joe?
I have a mundane question. I've got two computers. I've got two docks that have the applications in them. Yes. Neither one of them is where I want to go.
That's right.
And what I'm looking to do is find the easiest way dragging icons into, or trying to move icons into, to sync both docks.
Ooh, syncing docks. That's
but an easy way.
Yeah.
To make a dock like you'd like to have.
Sort of. Okay. First thing, you got to make sure both computers have the same applications in them. Okay. Because you can't have a icon in the dock for which there is no original piece of software. Otherwise, you get the famous question mark, which I've seen a time or two after updating somebody's computer. So, what would one do? Well, one would go and look, for example, in, say, probably library.
It's probably going to be a user account.
You have a valid point there. It has to be user because it is per user. Probably preferences, I would think. And it's probably Apple something. Let's see here.
Doc
plist. And let's see here if we can't look at the innards of this. There really is an application to do this correctly with. But, oh my, lovely XML. We all speak XML, don't we? Well, no. Really, the answer is simple, Jill. Copy that file from one the computer that's configured the way you want it to the computer that you want configured the same way.
Okay, so to make the first one the way you want it,
you got to do it the hard way. You got to do it the hard way, unless you speak XML and can write this by hand. So let's go back. You go under your user account, library preferences, and you look for the file called com.apple.doc.plist. plist, P-L, doc.plist. Yeah, and so that's the file that you want to clone from one machine to the other, but you have to have one correctly configured to begin with there. But at least, hey, half the work, you know?
And if you don't happen to have the same application on that, you just get
You get a question mark and you just drag it off and you have a cloud of dust and it's gone. Yes?
Betty has an iBook and she's been using Firefox. Probably 3 weeks ago when she opened it up, she got the web page, but it was just a blank page. Never could get anything in it. Restarted, didn't make any difference. So I checked the version and it was a couple of versions out of date, so I downloaded a new one. Worked great for about 3 days and then went back to that same blank sheet, blank page.
All right, let's see here.
Don't depress keep it stuff.
It could very well be plist thing. I'm not quite sure where that is stored, but seeing
one way to indicate that while Marius is looking is do it in another user account, do the same operation.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And if it is, that other user account has a clean plist in it.
Yeah.
Right.
So then you know that it is a plist issue.
Okay.
Yeah. It could be two things. As I said, it could be plist. Or it could be some cache for that particular application, in this case Firefox. And I'm just trying to find out because I see Camino has things where it belongs under application support, but Firefox, which is installed on this computer, doesn't seem to. And so that is somewhat disconcerting because I was expecting to find a folder in there.
There it is. Org.mozilla.
Org.mozilla.firefox.plist. Yeah.
All right. How do you clear the cache?
Well, first of all, I have no idea what's in there, if this has anything to do with the cache at all. And the answer is, doesn't look like it. Okay. It just has some minor preferences recorded in it. So that's not your cache. So let's do this, get into Firefox, because I'm assuming that Firefox will somewhere in its preferences.
I think Safari has a place.
Well, Safari has it, especially if you're in debug mode.
Yeah.
But let's see here. Be under privacy, except yeah. This is sort of a way of cleaning the cache. Okay, clear my private data, because that's really another way of saying stuff that I've downloaded that is stored on the hard drive. Okay, so that's sort of code for saying clear cache. See here if there's anything, any other place where that might be, but I don't see it. Where these guys are hiding it. And I think that's it. Yep. All right. Any other flash? Yes, Keith. Yeah.
I'm looking to add a printer.
All right. You would click here, but that's going to be hard to simulate since there's no printer.
Why not? I want to go to the add a printer list thing. So I can tell you what I'm talking about.
All right.
Okay, at this point, printer and I want this to show up in the default browser.
Right.
So
is not an option yet.
At the bottom it is.
No, it's mine.
I see it not. Oh, there, yes, pardon me.
And then it'll choose, see, under Apple, what's under Apple Dock pop up? The Windows printer, printing is where I'm going.
All right.
Again, we're not gonna get anything. I just wanna show you where I am.
Right.
And then I choose network neighborhood. Of course, there's not anything there either.
Right.
When I get to the network neighborhood list, I choose the RDAC domain.
Mm-hmm.
And then this list of all this junk out of RDAC comes up. But it only comes up through M.
Oh!
I never see past M.
In other words, we have found an undocumented feature. Anything
now,
below N filter.
I think it is not actually the alphabet in question. I think they just have so blooming many entities
yep.
out there that this application is limited on the number it'll show.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's a bug. It is just, you've just filled the buffer with as many entries as it can handle.
And this has been years.
Well, sure. You know, I'm not the IT guy there, but if I were, I would have not one single set domain, but be able to go in sub work groups so that you group it by building or group it by some smaller unit. But hey, we're being logical. Sorry.
And furthermore, I would assume that in the Windows world, there's some way to say this thing is a computer, not a printer.
Mm-hmm.
I believe every computer in the RDAC domain shows up in that list,
well,
whether it's a printer or not.
Every computer that has the proper sharing set up will show up, and that same thing happens at A&M.
Which is all defaulted.
Well, no, because you see, in the Windows world, how do you print? You don't print directly to the printer, you print through a computer, which the printer is attached to. And hence, every computer has the capability of being the print server that you want to connect to. Hence, every computer has to show up. I have the same problem at A&M. Okay, but I have a small work group for the computers in the computer lab, and hence I don't have to deal with what's at the administration building or God knows where else. That's their problem, not mine.
But isn't it lovely that Microsoft thought of that for you?
Yeah. They were good to you. Yeah.
Got one, I think it's a quick one. Back up my changes on my hard drive, a little horrible, I got hooked up. Now, just about a week ago, I get this warning, failed to open process, continued without root privilege. Went back to disk utility, ran it on both my hard drive and backup, everything's clean. And I don't know why this message popped up all of a sudden. I've been doing this for 2 years.
Yep.
And well, is there a solution?
You have the message up there right now?
Right now.
Okay, let me have a look.
That is most curious.
They say, okay, it'll go through and start the copy and the backup process, but it doesn't do its normal thing.
First of all, this is coming from Silverkeeper plus C software.
Yeah.
Or seasoned software. They probably didn't write it, but somebody did for them. And there is a problem with it. If you do repair disk permission, unless it was installed using the Apple installer, which it may not have been, there is no set of receipts. And if you go under library receipts in your hard drive, there is no such as Silverkeeper, then when you do repair disk permissions, it will not know about the file or what its permissions are supposed to be, and hence, it's not going to repair anything. So, therefore, running
repair disk permissions didn't do any good because disk permissions didn't know what to do. Okay, so what that really means is you may have to do this the hard way. You may have to find out where the actual executable is, which is under probably applications, Silver Keeper or whatever it's called, /content/macOS 10 or something to that effect, and have to go do this from the terminal or use get info or something like that. Not what I consider trivial. What I would do is, as I said, you can repair it until you're blue in the face. It's not going to do anything as long as this permission does not know. Let me bring something up here on the screen to illustrate this a little bit. If I go library, there is something called receipts. Okay, all these are installed packages. Actually, this is only part of the information that is installed when you install a package using Apple Installer. Now, if I go in here and open one of these up under contents, there are various files. Okay, and this guy right here, the bill of materials, the BOM file, okay, actually knows about what the permissions are supposed to be for every file. And so as repair permission runs, it goes through all these .pkg files, or more precisely, the contents BOM file, archive.bom file, and checks if the permission as installed are the same as the permissions in the bill of materials. If they are, great. If they aren't, it fixes it. If there is no BOM file, which is likely if you're not using an Apple Installer.
I got your logic now. I think this is my answer. Yeah.
So what's the fix?
Yeah.
The fix, as I said, is the easiest fix is just to deinstall and reinstall,
right,
quite honestly. But I would also probably fire an email off to Lassie and say, hey, I've got this problem. Is there something wrong with the software, or is it just something got corrupted on my machine?
You said something earlier about the drive being formatted with a non-Apple. I thought you said that.
No. It's the install using Apple Installer versus using some third-party installer.
For example, Microsoft Office does not use the Apple Installer, so there will
right.
not be receipts.
Right.
From Microsoft Office in that folder, in that
right.
library receipts folder.
Right. Right. And a lot of other applications use third-party installers. You know, past there wasn't an Apple install on OS 9, so people used all sorts of other programs to do this. But that's the problem. It doesn't know what the permissions are supposed to be, hence it can't fix them. Lip. Yeah, brings up a point. Snaps Pro is another way of recording presentations. Okay, not only will it make movies of what's up on the screen, but it will also take the audio file. Okay, make an audio file. So that's one other way of recording HMUG presentations. I mean, today we're just recording audio. I have a program on this machine called ProfCast, which is actually running here, which I use on campus to record my lectures, okay, because it's kind of neat. You have this little widget that shows up. You drag in a PowerPoint or a keynote presentation, and you click Start Recording. And notice I could plug in the microphone here and choose it just as easily. And it synchronizes my changes in the slides with my voice. OK? Okay, so in other words, as I'm giving my presentation, when I hit next slide, that occurs at the same time as I'm actually doing it in the audio track. Very neat. This is $30, academic, $60 for the rest of the world.
What's it called?
ProfCast. Professor Podcast, I guess.
Yeah, it's particularly apropos for him.
Well, I resemble that remark, yes. But it's a neat tool. Well, that's sort of the plan, that I record my lecture and the students then can pull it down later point if they miss something.
And you can go sailing while you're giving the lecture.
I'm not quite sure if I can get away with that one.
You can get a cardboard cutout.
That'll work. I'll take that for advisement.
What that is good for, though, is if you have the course, somebody can connect in and re-listen.
Well, that's the whole point.
And where that comes up is students that are ADHD or dyslexic,
yep,
problem with reading.
Mm-hmm.
My son was ADHD,
mm-hmm,
and we had cassette tape recorders that he took to all these lectures in college,
mm-hmm,
because his... somebody would say something in the lecture and his mind would go off on a tangent.
Yep.
And so then he could walk around doing other things and wasn't re-listening to the lecture.
Right.
And it paid off. He graduated with honors and went on to medical school. So,
mm-hmm.
But this would be perfect.
Yeah. Well, this has many applications. That is one of them. The other is those students that are just not the world's quickest note takers, they can go back, hear what I say, because, you know, what I'm saying with quickest note takers, I have made the observation that students are very conscientious about taking notes. Problem is, while they're doing that, they're looking at what's on the screen and not listening to a word I say. And there's information in both tracks, and it's not necessarily the same. And so that allows them to go back later and listen to the audio and see if they missed something in their notes. So it has multiple uses. All right. Any last flashes here? If not, I'll let Adam declare this meeting adjourned. Actually, we have to do this now. With motions. Now, this is the informal meeting, after all. So let's adjourn and head over to a Mac resource.
Huntsville Macintosh Users Group would like to thank Mac Resource, North Alabama's Macintosh specialists with server co-location. Visit Mac Resource at www.macalabama.com. Please also visit the HMUG homepage at www.hmug.org. That is www.hmug.org.